Welcome back, guys. DGS 205. So, Wheels, any more clarity on anything from Jupiter and the Cardinals?
Not really. Not as far as the injuries go. I mean, we haven't got a new update in the last day or two on Lars Nootbaar.
Edmonds must be really...
He's going to miss a while. I mean, he's not still not doing anything. And
does it sound like it's that bad of an injury, or is it more like, man, we just can't get this thing right?
It sounds like the second part. Like, he had the surgery way back at the beginning of the offseason, and it's just not recovering the way that he wants to. So when he starts swinging the bat, it starts to become painful.
It hurts again.
So look, wrist injuries for hitters are really difficult. And that's why if I'm the Cardinals, and I'm sure they're going to look at it this way, I mean, I'm going to take my sweet time. I would absolutely slow play it. And if that means you don't see him until June, fine. I can't imagine at this moment seeing him before May. Just if you're not doing anything right now because it hurts, it's going to be really hard to ramp up real fast.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to. I don't think you want to. I mean, you want it to get back and be right and be good. And with a wrist for a hitter, if you don't get it right, then you're going to be dealing with it all year.
So Victor Scott starting center fielder?
I mean, it's one of the possibilities, and I think it's the most intriguing one. I was just talking about this with Joe Pott yesterday. Joe was in for Matt Pauly, and we were talking about it off the air. Just if you're going to be totally all in on defense, right? We're trying to help our pitchers. We're going to put the best defensive lineup out there. Then that's with Victor Scott in center field, because that makes all the other dominoes fall into place, especially with Lars Nootbaar maybe not being good at the beginning of the year because of the broken ribs. Because Dylan Carlson's fine in center, but he's really good in a corner outfield spot. And Victor Scott is really good in center. So if you're going to go that route, you're going really good in center. We'll see about Walker and Wright. I think he's going to get better. He won't be like he was last year. He was bad last year. He'll be better, but he's not considered a really strong defender right now. Mm-hmm. But you'd have a really good option in left field and a really good option in center field, like top end. And then obviously Nolan Arenado's top end. Mason Wynn should be a top end defender. Gorman and Donovan are fine at second base. Mm-hmm. Donovan won a gold glove. Mm-hmm. And Goldschmidt is excellent at first base. So you're really excellent all around. If you start changing it a little bit, if you're going Carlson in center, he's average-ish there. Well, then you're going to have somebody like Burleson in left, who is below average. So you could have average, below average, below average in your outfield.
Who is in left under your first set?
It would be Carlson. Assuming,
gotcha.
Unless Nootbaar's healthy. Nootbaar will be the left fielder when he's healthy.
And where is he?
He's just coming back from that rib cage injury, the broken
just
ribs.
Just waiting for it to.
So you just got to wait for broken ribs to heal. That's just all it is. And he's not swinging. Like, he's not taking at bats. He played catch a couple days ago, and apparently that went okay. But it's just one of those deals where they're bones, so they have to heal, and it takes time. So once they heal, you're probably okay. But then you got to get back in shape.
My last name's not DeWitt, but I would say that if you're starting out with two of the best teams in baseball, let's focus on defense.
Well, that's the thing. And you look at your pitching staff and see how this all ties together, right? Your pitching staff is not a strikeout pitching staff. You don't have guys like Sonny Gray strikes people out. Sonny Gray's not going to be there on opening day. We know that already. They've acknowledged that. And he may be ready for the Padres series. Maybe he's ready for the home opener, the following week. But he's not there for L.A. So you're going to be going up against L.A. for four games with guys that are not big strikeout people. Miles Michaelis is not a strikeout pitcher. Mats can be, but he doesn't pitch deep into games. Kyle Gibson's not a strikeout guy. And Lance Lynn is much less of a strikeout guy than he used to be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those guys give up fly balls. Well, if you're giving up fly balls, what do you need? You need strong outfield defense. So that would be the case for Victor Scott. The case against it is maybe you don't think he's ready to hit and you don't want to have to send him down in a month because you don't look at what happened with Walker going down last year and the confusion that caused and, you know, got the fan base all riled up. So
I would get it if he's going to hit .110.
Yeah.
But I mean, is he going to hit that much worse than Carlson?
I don't know. But, I mean, like, look at Mason Wynn last year.
Yeah.
He hit .140 or something in September, and it wasn't good. And that's different at the end of a bad season where it doesn't matter.
Right.
Than it is in April of a season where you're trying to bounce back from that bad season. And that really, but that's really the question, Dave, is...
I would err on the side of giving him a chance.
Yeah, see, because...
Show me you can't hit.
It's a tougher question if Nootbaar's ready. Because Noot's going to play left if he's healthy. And he's a good hitter, so, you know, you need him in the lineup. And that gives you a little more flexibility in center field where you can be like, all right, we can get by with Dylan. He's going to hit eighth, whatever, anyway. Yeah. It's not the end of the world. But, you know, Victor Scott has hit well, and he hit well in the Arizona Fall League.
Who's the man on the bubble? Who's the guy that's going to hurt Mozeliak the most to send down to AAA?
Nobody if they're healthy. It's pretty simple and straightforward if everybody's healthy, because you're going to have the backup catchers, Yvonne Herrera, and you're going to have Matt Carpenter on the team. You're going to have Brandon Crawford on the team. And then if everybody's healthy, Dylan Carlson's your backup outfielder. He's your fourth outfielder. But with Tommy Edman being down for sure, then you're in that position. Do we keep this kid named Michael Ciani, who's a defensive outfielder but not much of a hitter? Do
you had to
keep
pick
Victor Scott?
One guy to be on your bench, just all things being equal, would you rather have Carpenter or Scott?
I don't want Scott on my bench. If he's up, he's playing. Like, he's got to play every day if he's up. And that's part of the decision, too. But
that's interesting.
But to me, again, just looking at what we know right now, not knowing whether Nootbaar is going to be ready or not, if you're really, you got to put your best team out there. You can't let anything get in the way of that. So forget service time issues. Forget whether or not you might have to send Victor Scott back down and what that does to him. You can't think about any of that. You have to open with your best 26.
Yeah.
And right now, Victor Scott looks like one of your best 26.
And might get lucky.
No, you're right. And if he takes off and he's a league average hitter, but he's an elite defender and he's stealing bags left and right, he's exciting.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing about
him. He's causing problems.
He and Mason Wynn are exciting players.
Totally agree.
They're fun.
And we need that.
Yes, absolutely. So you want to be good, but having guys that are exciting helps that too. And if those guys are hitting eighth and ninth, it's really not the end of the world, even if they're below average, as long as they're not cratering.
Let's talk a little March Madness. I know that you paid attention less this year. You said that you have in the past. Both you and Pauly were saying you've been busy.
Yeah.
What are the major stories, though? What are the teams you're really looking for?
Well, I mean, I think the overriding theme for me anyway, and it's one that I think has been, this has now been going on for multiple years, but it's getting more and more to be the norm, is that I don't know what to expect.
Right.
Like, you can take the top two or three or four teams. Take Houston. They're probably the team that I would pick to win it all if you put me on the spot and said pick a team to win it all. But they could lose in the second round. You know, you do not have the dominant teams that you used to have. You used to have a dominant Kentucky team or a dominant Duke team, and every year you'd have a couple of those. And I just don't see it. The top 8, 12, 16 teams.
Beatable.
Well, they're just more level.
Yeah.
Right? There aren't the elite of the elite as often. And
are the we just made it by the skin of our teeth teams better than they used to be?
I think overall the playing field has been leveled. To some degree, the mid majors have been hurt a little bit by the transfer portal because a lot of their best players, instead of sticking around for 4 years, because they're not first round draft picks, they're not going to leave early for the NBA. Instead of having like three or four guys that have played together for 4 years like they used to, well, sometimes those guys leave and go start for an elite team that loses a player to the NBA.
Rach, you care about March Madness?
Not really.
Didn't really get into it?
No, they sent out an email that we could play in the office, and I'm like, I could take a crack at it, but I have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'm not doing it this year.
Just don't feel like getting into it?
The only way I could fill out a bracket and feel good about it is if I was just going to use the analytics. Well, what's the fun in that? They're not even my selections.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to watch the games. I love Thursday and Friday. They're so much fun. And I like the games at the end, too. I mean, those are the best ones. The Final Four are the best ones because they're the ones that have gotten there. So I'll still watch it. I'll enjoy it. But I just don't know enough. And I used to be the guy that would finish in the money almost every year in office pools because I would watch nonstop and it's an interview, all the experts and do all that. And obviously there just isn't the same amount of time for all sports that I used to have, which is why I had to pick something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not backing off on baseball ever. I'm never going to back off on football, college or pro. I'm not going to back off on hockey. I love hockey and we have the Blues in town. So
basketball
lost.
Did they play last night?
Yes.
I know they're going for their sixth win in a row.
Yeah, they're a team that they're in one of these weird spots where they go on a hot streak and they'll win five in a row or they'll win four out of five. They lost last night to Colorado, but I mean, no big deal. Colorado is one of the best teams in the league, and probably if I'm picking a Stanley Cup team to come out of the West, it's going to be Colorado. But the Blues are a team that are just. They ride the wave, you know. If you look at their season record, they go in these like 6 or 7 game stretches where you go 5-2 in one stretch, and then you lose 5 in a row. And
I see that we extended Bennington. Did the internet welcome that? Was it pretty?
I mean, he's not been any part of the problem, in my opinion. He's been perfectly good and stable. I didn't see people freaking out when that happened. And that was a while back. But he's a guy that you can win games with if you can support him. You can win a Stanley Cup with him when he gets hot. We know that's a fact. Goalies' performance in general, year to year, tend to waver. There are a handful of like a small group of top goalies that are consistent over a long period of time, but it's not a normal thing.
Yeah.
When we've seen that with the Blues, how many years do they just the backup takes over?
Yep.
You know, that was Binnington when they won the cup. He just took over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a position that is got some up and down, but I think Binnington has showed that when he's on, he's one of the best, a hot streak goalies. And if you support him and you have a good team around him, he's fine. They don't have a good team right now. They have a mediocre team. They're not terrible. They're not crappy, but this is probably what you're looking at for another 2 or 3 years.
So one thing it's not difficult to understand. I've just never cared enough to look into it, which is why I'm asking you now. But once the regular season starts with the Cardinals, let's say that things start to go south. What are their options? Like as far as making trades or making moves?
So are you talking about just picking a direction?
No, more like buy or sell. Rules. Like, can you trade all season?
You can trade anytime you want.
Okay.
The practicality is, though, nobody else makes trades until June or July, and more likely the end of June, not early June.
So you're going to either pay through the nose because someone's going to take advantage of your need.
That's the problem.
Or you're not going to make any moves until midsummer.
Right. So, and most teams don't want to declare buyer or seller until at least July. Because they want to sell tickets, right? So with the extra wild cards now, and you got, you know, 3 wild card spots in each league, you don't have to make the declaration of being a seller until you get near the trade deadline. So you're looking at 3 or 4 months with what you have in house. I mean, regardless of whether, I don't mean necessarily your major league team, you can promote people from the minors and things like that. But I'll say this about this year's Cardinals. Being neutral can't happen. You can't say if you get off to a bad start, we're just going to stick it out. If you get off to a bad start, it's time to sell. Mm. And more than last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. More. I mean, they only sold a couple of guys. Because you got a lot of older players that are on 1-year deals or that they're coming up on, maybe another year after this.
Give me a little context. Like, and I'm not going to hold you to this, obviously, but just for an example, give me a date and a games behind where you go fire sale.
Well, let's say you're getting into mid-July and it's like last year. Right. I mean, I don't know what the games behind is because the division stinks.
Yeah.
So you might be only 5 games out if you're bad. But I would say if you're mid-July and you're a losing team, you probably have to try to trade Paul Goldschmidt if he's willing to go somewhere. If you can find a contender that, because he's a free agent at the end of the year, unless you've negotiated a deal by then, unless you're going to sit down with him and say, hey, let's hammer out an extension. And maybe he doesn't want to if you're a losing team again. I mean, like, there's a whole lot of areas. But if you get to that point, you got to start talking about him, Miles Mikolas, obviously all of the guys you just brought in, Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, because they're on 1-year deals.
And what do you try to get?
Whatever you can. I mean, you'll get something good for Goldie. Like, if he's available, contenders will be like, yes, please. You know, like, he's a guy that would get some value. The other guys depends on how they're doing. You know, I mean, Miles would probably get something because he's got another year of control and teams kind of like that.
Even though we just re-signed Molina, would he survive another season just like last year? Let's say it's almost a carbon copy.
You mean Ollie?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, he's not going anywhere. I mean, he can. Having the extension doesn't mean they can't fire him.
Right.
It's not enough money for a man. Managers don't make enough money to be that locked in. But I think they made it clear that if it goes wrong, they're not blaming him. Yeah. It's on the roster construction. And honestly, that puts it on Mo. I mean, that's who the target's on.
Wheels, I just thought of this when Dave asked how the internet reacted to Binnington. How much do you think the internet plays into how ownership makes their moves, whether it's the Cardinals or any team out there? You know, it feels like 10 years ago it was a non-factor. And now you have so many people who are able to weigh in online.
Yeah, yeah. I still think social media means nothing to the teams.
Okay.
They don't care. They don't care what we say on talk radio. They didn't care what I said when I was doing full sports radio. They don't care what I say now. They don't care what's happening on Twitter. They do care about fan behavior.
Okay.
So if the ratings start to go down, if seats are empty more and more, and more importantly than that, if tickets stop being sold, Like last year, they still were over 3 million tickets, even though there were a lot of empty seats in the second half. When that starts to be tickets aren't being purchased, when that turns into more empty seats and lower ratings on TV, that's what they'll care about.
225 DGS, a race people are going after Barron Trump.
Yeah, this former NBC exec, I think his name is Mike Singleton. He went on Twitter on Barron Trump's birthday and said, oh, he's 18 now, he's fair game. And people were like, that's really creepy and weird. Why would you say something like that? And he's like, I just mean he's fair game to go after politically. And just leave the kid alone.
Leave the kid alone.
I mean, legally, I 100%. Guess it's fine to bully him if you would wish, but he's never done anything. He's just like a tall young man. Just and let him
you know
live
what?
His life.
He's never, I've never heard the guy say a word. But
right.
Even if he did, even if he started leaning into the whole Trump stuff, he's 18.
Teenager.
I don't want people going after Phoebe, who's 19, even if she were to be like, my dad's greatest ever. If you don't like him, you can just suck it.
Yeah.
No, she's 19. She's not grown yet.
What do you think the age is for that? Because I agree with you. I think 18, even if he were to jump into the field and start commenting, I think 18 is probably a bit too early to be jumping on someone. Is it mid-20s, early 20s, just out of college?
I would say mid-20s. If they're extreme.
If they're really
like, if you're really going to talk some crap and you're 25, okay, you can sit at the table. But no, I mean, like, we have enough people to slam on and if enough people slamming us, let's just let it go.
Because, like, Hunter Biden's fine, I think. No reason you shouldn't be able to go after him. No reason you shouldn't be able to go after John Jr. or Eric or Ivanka. Because they're
in the mix.
They're in the mix somehow, even though they're not necessarily elected. But they're out there and their voices are being in it. Hunter's making money off it. Like that's all fine. But what about somebody like when Chelsea Clinton was younger who really wasn't doing that?
Mm-hmm. No.
If they stay out of it, is that like leave them alone?
I think so.
Like the Obama kids.
Yeah.
You don't really hear from them.
No, leave them alone. Let them live their lives.
I agree.
It's just a really weird sentiment to be like, hey, guys, good news. He's of legal age for us to bully him. Like, you are a freak.
Yeah,
Calm down. That's stupid.
I think the advice that I would give to anyone who ever thinks a thought like that, don't ever comment on anyone turning 18.
Yeah, for
any reason.
So you can bully them, so you can do something else. Just don't ever say, hey, he's 18.
Do you guys see that John Mellencamp had a hissy fit last night and walked off stage?
No, what happened?
What did he do that for?
He's mad at Barron. He's an a-hole.
Is he really?
I friends used to live next door to him.
Really?
Yeah, he's grade A. And people were heckling him because he wouldn't shut up. And they're like, play a song. He was doing like a storyteller's thing. And he threatened to take 10 songs off the set list.
What?
And they're like, just play a song. And he's like, show's over. And he walked off.
What a baby. Was it
billed as a concert?
Or it was a concert.
Okay, so it wasn't like, come listen to John talk.
Oh, no. 233 DGS on KMOX. We have a think tank coming up later on. Yesterday we had a short day. It's typically on Tuesdays. Mike Elam and Steve Butts will be on. Both good guys. Both really smart, reasonable people. Wheels, I saw something on TikTok that would have made you turn inside out. It was probably 10-year-old football players. And you know, when you do the tackling drill and you face off, they were doing that against their parents.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yep.
And their parents are putting them on their backs.
Yep. Always good to take the brains of your young children and shake them around.
What the hell?
I don't know. I mean, like, I've seen that where it's slightly older kids, where it's like 13 and 14-year-olds, and like their moms are trying to tackle them, sometimes the dads. Even that's a bit much. But man, yeah, I've seen them. They're like, some of them are cool about it, right? You see some of the parents like, oh, I'm just going to drag him down, or I'm going to let him beat me. Like, let him have the fun. And others just like, this is their chance to smoke the kid. Like, I've been waiting to hit this kid, and now I can, and it's okay.
It's so, having been in sports my entire life, I mean, you know what I mean, until I stopped, it's so easy. I don't even know what you call them, like a stage mom, but a sports dad. It's so easy to spot the guy that was the second or third string cornerback on his high school team and thought he should have been the starting running back and living vicariously. It just pisses me off.
That particular thing I don't get. Like, it's fun to sometimes, like I played baseball and when I was a kid, there were times we would have like a dads versus kids, but the dads didn't play for real. Like, they didn't throw as hard as they could. They didn't try to hit the crap out of the ball and kill one of us. They were just kind of goofing around and letting us have some fun doing it. And you know, basketball is a little different thing. You can do that kind of thing. Man, it's just, what are you proving?
Yeah.
You're bigger than your kid, okay?
Yeah, I don't think it's about the kid.
Shocking. You're bigger than your kid.
Rach, what do you got?
I want to talk about the internet a little bit.
Okay.
So this Google ad from 1999 has resurfaced, and people are saying that it is aged like milk. Here's what the ad says. www.google.com is a pure search engine. No weather, no newsfeed, no links to sponsors, no ads, no distractions, no portal litter. Nothing but a fast-loading search site. Reward them with a visit. So I got to thinking, like, how much has the internet changed since 1999 was probably around the time where I was getting on the internet for the first time, too. And I would just go to like pbskids.org and look at the Arthur page. That was the main thing I did online.
Yeah.
But just thinking about how much it's changed since we first started utilizing it to now, where we use it for everything.
My first memory of the internet was when Nick was probably 12 or so, and he spent the night with his cousin Andrew, and his mom called me the next day and said, we have problems.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, how bad is it? And she's like, BrazilianBabes.com. I'm like, we're fine.
Yeah.
Trust me, we're fine.
Could be so much
could
worse.
Could be so much worse.
I think about the term BrazilianBabes.com all the time. Ever since you first told me that story. I think like every other day, I'm like.
But you know, like, I don't have a good sense. I know the internet, whatever, dorks, was created in 73 or whatever. But like, I don't have a good memory of when I first started actually using it and what I used it for. I'm sure it was buying something.
Yeah.
But I don't remember when I first started using eBay. Was it 2000? Was it 2010? I have no idea.
Yeah. So when I was in college, it was the first time I had heard of email. And that was really only like...
Yeah, I was a lawyer. That's about right.
Right. It was that was the first time that it started becoming available to the public widely and generally. I'm sure it was in smaller ways before that. So that was, I graduated in 94, so probably 93-ish, 94. By the time I got out, when we moved back, we moved into my in-laws' place because we were getting married later that year, but they had dial-up. They had just gotten dial-up. So, you know, mid-90s was when you could just dial through your phone. Hopefully nobody picked up the phone to make a call and knocked you off the internet while you were on there.
How recent has it been that things took, like, minutes to download?
Man, I had dial-up until I was, like, a junior in high school, so that was, like, 2008.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I also lived in Grafton, so we were kind of slow to get the high-speed stuff, but...
Well, I was doing this and representing Spectrum and went out to their campus, and they had, like, four laptops set up showing the differences in speed of downloads. And the fastest one was like, this thing's going to be here in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And look at this one. This old bag's going to take you 2 hours. And it was like, 20 minutes? Nothing happens in 20 minutes.
So like high speed was late 90s, early 2000s, right?
Yeah. I'll buy that. Right.
Yeah. And that's when it started speeding up. Obviously, it's just done nothing but speed up ever since.
I have another story here that's internet related because it has to do with AI, which is obviously the next step in all of this. Lego used AI generated images on their website to advertise for their Ninjago section of its website. So I guess that's like ninjas, but Lego. So
couldn't they just call them Lego ninjas?
I don't know. But they put up all these AI-generated images, and you can tell that they are because their little Lego hands are all weird-looking, and there's tells. And people saw it, and they got really upset. They're like, Lego, I thought your entire business plan and your mission was for people to create...
Human creativity.
Human creativity, exactly, Dave. So they are apologizing. The images have been taken down.
Even they can't put their own things together.
Right. Yeah.
They say we have a clear policy not to use generative AI to create Lego content, and they will take all necessary steps to ensure that it won't happen again.
I remember one of the first times I came to terms with one of my character flaws, and it was in Eddie O'Neill had a breezeway between the house and the garage, and we did that. They had all their games out there, and he was my rich kid friend, which meant his dad was a manager at Olin, and he had a big Lego set. And after about 2 hours of work, I had put together a block, and he had put together a spaceship, and I just remember going, not only can I not do that, I have no interest in it.
Yeah.
Just none. We had a big, giant The Last Supper puzzle that took up the entire, like, kitchen table, and zero. Nothing.
Yeah.
No interest.
Oh.
I like stuff like
I'm
that.
I'm not a builder.
I like Legos.
More of a breaker.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. You build it, we'll break it. You start all over again.
I was like, can we just go play baseball?
I have one more internet story if you'd like to hear. It's about pornography, so, you know, maybe change the channel if children are listening.
Logged in.
But
here goes
they got to learn at some point.
Access to sites like Pornhub have been restricted in states like Texas. This is actually spreading to other states as well. But basically, they have passed a law that makes you verify your age to use these websites. So you have to upload a copy of your photo ID in order to log in to prove that you're 18 years old and mature enough to see this content. And Texas was like, we don't like this. And Pornhub was like, well, we're just not going to provide our services to these states that have passed these laws. And the reason they gave is because they say it's actually less secure for and puts minors more at risk to have people upload their IDs for things like this. I don't really understand how that makes any sense. I don't understand. Yeah, I don't get that. They did say their reasoning behind it was, okay, so if you have to show your ID to get into a site like Pornhub, people who aren't going to do that are just going to go onto the dark web or something and get on the really bad websites.
I can tell you that if Missouri implemented that, I'm instantly out of that game. And I'm not going to the dark web. I don't know what I'll do, but like I'm not... I figure that by this time, everyone who wants anything of mine, they have it, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Chinese, the U.S., Pornhub, whoever wants your stuff, they got it. But if someone says, nope, you're going to need to send us a photo ID, nope.
Well, I understand people's reluctance to upload their photo ID to a porn website. They probably don't want the information being leaked and like, oh, look, this person looks at porn. But at the same time, every other mature substance that you're using, I mean, nicotine, alcohol, cannabis, you have to provide a photo ID in order to access these things. It's insane that something as mind-altering as pornography can be is just like there for the taking for anyone who knows how to Google it.
Do you think it's like my mom and dad didn't drink, so I had no liquor to steal, but I wouldn't have anyway because it just wasn't my thing. But my friends whose parents did and never got caught, maybe because their parents didn't care, maybe because they were just a little more motivated to not get caught than the parents were to catch them. Do you think it's the same way with online stuff? If some 12 or 13-year-old wants to see something, they're going to see it?
As a kid, we saw Playboy magazines.
Yeah.
I couldn't buy them. They were age-restricted. We still saw them.
That's a good point.
When we were in high school, everybody still had booze.
And it was probably more difficult for us to see those than it would be for kids to see something online today.
It was more difficult for sure. Yeah, it's easier when you can pull up on your phone or on your iPad.
I had to get it away from my
mom. I think there's because I don't think kids should be exposed to that stuff at all. And it was something as a parent that I was concerned about. And how do we make sure that that's not happening? How do we limit opportunity? How do we monitor, you know, without spying? But I think that's kind of the point. At what level does it become... I mean, all these people that I'm assuming, because these are all conservative states, are all about, you know, small government. Well, this is pretty big brother. If you're going to be telling people that this behavior is going to be monitored by your state.
I'm going to have to push back a little bit. I think the only reason we look at it that way is because it has been so free and accessible online for this long. It's just been the standard of like, hey, if you want to see porn, you can see it on the internet easily. I think if it had started out as like, yeah, you pay for it and you show your ID and we're taking all the necessary steps to make sure it's not falling
like alcohol.
Right, exactly. Because we don't say that. Right, that you're treading on my rights by IDing me whenever I go buy a bottle of wine.
We let the cat out of the bag, and now we're trying to put it back in.
Yeah,
I see that, but we're not talking about a physically addictive thing that alters your mind immediately.
Yes, immediately. Yeah. We are 100%. We are
not. It's not the same. There's no chemical addiction. It's more along the lines of no. It's not.
It's because a brain chemical.
It's what.
It's a brain chemical.
No, I understand. It's not a chemical you're putting into your body.
It's a chemical that you are accessing that your body will release.
Like, right. But it's not going to give you cancer. It's not going to cause your liver to fail. It's not going to cause that. I mean,
you go blind.
There are a lot of things. Foams. And I again, I am sympathetic to the argument. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm trying to present a counter that there are a lot of things.
Is there a free speech element to it?
I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah.
I think that Pornhub is definitely leaning into that.
Yeah, that's a good question from their side. I'm trying to look at it more from a parent side.
Yeah.
Where there are a lot of things that are going to cause psychological things for my child that I need to be aware of. There's a difference between that and something that could drink themselves
more
into a coma.
Immediate danger.
Well, not just immediate, but also physical. Like, I'm not saying that the psychological can become physical, and I completely get it. But my kid's not going to overdose on Pornhub. They're not going to end up in an ER. They're not going to end up like I had a friend in high school who had to have his stomach pumped because he drank too much. He got alcohol poisoning. He could have died. It almost did. Like, that's not going to happen. And I don't know that that's the right line to draw. I think that's where we need to have a talk, though.
Put some entertainment news.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Ewan McGregor, one of my favorites, is married to Mary Elizabeth Winstead, one of my favorites. Those two pretty people right there. They are married, and they just did a movie together where they have sex, and they used an intimacy coordinator for their sex scenes. And people are losing their minds, saying like, okay, wokeness has finally gone too far. You're married, and it's a movie. You're fine.
I tend to agree with the wokeness has gone too far on this one. Like,
is that a woke
thing? That's your husband, and that's your wife.
But are they are movies required to have that kind
pretty
of
much
person
at this point?
And did they just like, hey, listen, we're going to let you do your thing, but you know, we got this.
But also, devil's advocate, part of that job, as I understand it, is also managing how like the crew members.
Right.
Oh, that's a good
like how many crew members are in,
how many
in the room at a time
there,
or whatever.
Making sure that like the set is locked off.
I will say it would be weird if that person's going to like those guys. Okay, now you move here and you do this. That would be a little bit weird.
Joey Fatone says that the other guys in NSYNC aren't just waiting around for Justin Timberlake to call. In fact, sometimes they even have to say no to him because, quote, everyone's busy.
Sure you are, Joe.
Okay. That sounds like something Joey Fatone would say.
Was he that guy?
Well, no, I just mean like, I think that I don't think Justin Timberlake is being like, yeah, they're constantly turning me down. they won't take my calls. They keep blocking my numbers.
Beyonce is causing more kerfuffle in the country music world. She's still number one. Now she's top 10 with that album in non-country. And right on the album, it says, this ain't a country album. This is a Beyonce album. And country people are going crazy.
They're like, she told us up front. And she's still doing it.
She told us up front.
It's printed
How dare
right
you
there.
Be consistent. Fun fact?
Yeah.
Half the gold that's ever been found on Earth comes from one basin in South Africa.
Get out of here.
Fascinating.
That's neat.
That's a lot
called
of gold.
Called the Witwatersrand Basin in South Africa, and half the gold that's ever been found was right there.
There's gold in that basin.
The tradition of bridesmaids go all the way back to ancient Rome. Anyone know why the bridesmaids wore similar dresses to the bride?
So no one would kidnap the bride?
You can tell us right.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Because evil spirits would show up at the wedding to snatch the bride away.
Wow.
And so that's why you had bridesmaids, so it would confuse the spirits.
Evil spirits.
Gotta fool my assassins. I have a stupid question about gold.
Okay.
Okay, so gold is used to back up all currency in the world, right? Like, by governments.
Allegedly.
It's the gold backup. But if you go to the Witwatersrand Basin and you dig up a big chunk of gold, you just have that gold? That's your gold now?
Well, I mean, Witwater would have something to say
assuming,
about that.
Assuming the land is not owned by someone else.
If I dig in my backyard and find a big chunk of
it's
gold,
yours.
That's just my
it's
gold.
Yours. Yes, that's your gold. And then you could give it to somebody else for money.
You should check the coal room.
Yeah,
check
your backyard. That's what all those mice are doing there.
Here's the weirder question about gold that has bothered me forever. Why?
Yes. Right.
Why is gold so valuable?
Yes, all right. Literally, why?
We just decided because this rock is shiny, it's now worth everything.